Okay, so. Right, yesterday we defined what a functor was, and what a natural transformation was. And the reason these are important is because the collection, given two categories, the collection of all possible functors between these two categories forms itself a category. And as a category, it has as object these functors and this natural transformations. And this category is important because for a specific choice of category between which these functors are defined, it will be the category used to define quantum theory, and in particular, it is a topos. And it will be the topos that we're going to use. Okay, so now just to write, what is this functor category? Now, obviously, there are going to be two types, right? There's going to be the covariant one and the contravariant. So normally, the functor category, if you have two categories from C to D, the collection of all this all possible functors, which then form a category, is denoted as follows. Now, for the contravariant case, you still get the same functors from these two categories, but now they go the other way around. So you can either just say there's a collection of contravariant functors from C to D, but the way you denote it is as follows. So remember, this is the opposite category. So this is equivalent to saying that is a contravariant functor from C to D. It's just notation. And a contravariant functor is also called a presheaf. Okay, so what is this category? So it's a, what is a category? So it's defined on objects. We've got these guys. And on morphisms, you have those natural transformations that we defined yesterday, right? And this natural transformation composed as they should be because it's a category. So if you have n prime from G to Y, then they compose such that element-wise, this is just defined as the composition of the individual components, elements. I mean, all the definition we gave them yesterday, really. And obviously have the identity, etc., etc. Okay, so why is this important? Because for a specific type of these objects here, the category of all presheafs, which is a topos, I mean, both of them are topoi. But we will use this one for a specific choice of C and D. Now, before actually defining the correct category that we're going to use, I'll define one that is similar. In fact, it's the one that was originally used to define quantum theory in terms of topos theory. I think Isham introduced it maybe 12 years ago, I don't remember when. Then it subsequently was changed, but the reason I introduced it is just to give an idea of what it's like. And because so far we can actually, we have the enough knowledge to understand what this category is. And so it's this guy here. Now it is a topos, but for now we just, I haven't defined what topos is, but so for now I just consider it as a category. event is this? So it is a collection of all contravariant functors from this category here to sets. Now what is this? I never said it, I wrote it in the lecture notes, but I never said it. So what is this category here? So it's the category of self-adjoint operators on H, in over space, which have discrete spectrum. I think in the lectures I took away the D, so it was all of them. But this now you can tell the one, you can say subcategory, which of self-adjoint operators which have discrete spectrum. So it has this object, self-adjoint operators, with discrete spectrum. And as maps, so assume you have a map from the spectrum of some self-adjoint operator to the reals. Okay. Then you can express another self-adjoint operator in terms of this map as follows. I think also this I give the definition the first or second. So if this is the case, then there exists a map in here, which now I'll just write it with O under just to know that we're now inside here, which maps this self-adjoint operator to A. What is this category? Now this category here, which is a topos, is basically the collection of all functors, contravariant functors, from this guy to sets. Now, I said that this was the original topos used. It wasn't quite the right one. Now we'll see that the right one will always be the set of contravariant functors which have domain, codomain sets, but we'll change this guy. And instead of this category, we'll use the category of abelian von Neumann subalgebras. I will define what it is. Not now, but I will define. But there is a relation between self-adjoint operators and abelian von Neumann subalgebras, so they're not totally unrelated. This wasn't quite the right thing to use. However, already in here, you can start defining things, which then will have an analog in our final topos, and it's worth defining them. I think that they're easier to understand in this topos. And so, for example, a particular element in here, since we're talking about physics, will be a state space.
Mm-hmm. Oh. What's the, how do we get this map from B to A? The map in the from, yeah, if B is a function of A, how do we map from B to A?
Or you just define that there exists a map if that is the case.
Oh, okay.
The definition is this exists if.
Okay.
Haven't. Just there exists a map.
Okay.
And that's the right order. No, actually, I don't have to. But you just define that there is, so yeah, there exists if this is the case.
I didn't know if there was some way of working within what we know about self-adjoint operators to somehow then define a map between the operators, but.
Well, that is how you define it using self-adjoint operators.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to require, because it's a contravariant thing, in order to make sense eventually in sets, you
okay.
need this thing to go the other way around, and you just define it as there exists if this is the way you can do it in order.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't, this is how you can go that way. Okay, so an element in here, since we're trying to do physics, would be state space. Now, normally quantum theory uses a Hilbert space. We don't have Hilbert spaces at all. we have contrarian functors. So if you were to use this topos, the analog of a Hilbert space, or what we decided the Hilbert space should be, is something called the spectral presheaf. Which plays the role of the state space. So what is it? So it's a presheaf, obviously. So it's a contrarian functor from this category to sets, such that for each self-adjoint operator, it assigns, well, the name says it right, assigns a spectrum. And for each map in here, so here's why you need it to go the other way. So for each map here, then it assigns a map that goes the other way around. Which now is defined in terms of the original one, so that you get an element of this spectrum gets mapped to an element of the spectrum of B. Now, this definition, you always have to show that it is a well-defined contrarian functor. I think this is one of the exercises, but anyway, you have to show that this thing is the same as this, and two, that these two are the same. So now you go the other way around. Yeah, I think there's an example. Okay, so what does it look like if you had to draw a picture of the thing? You can just, I don't know if you're familiar with bundles, but you can just think of it as bundles, really. So here's your category. Here's your operators, etc., etc. And to each of them, you associate a spectrum. So now, conceptually, why could you, and you do this for all of them, and then if there's a map here, there are maps like this. We'll give an example in a bit, but why is it that this object here was associated the status of a state space? Now what this thing does, it to each operator, it tells you all the possible values that operator can have. It does those for all of them. So locally, you can see this as the state space of that operator in the sense that it tells you all that you can know, all the possible values of this. And now you do it for all operators. And you can interpret this. It will be clear when we do the full quantum theory in terms of topos, but you can interpret this as the topos analog of a state space, where locally you get all possible values for each operator. Okay, let's try and give an example of this guy. So, okay, let's consider a very simple category. So imagine you just have this. It's kind of unrealistic, but whatever. Imagine you have just these operators. These have discrete spectrum. Now we want to somehow define maps, so they have to be related, the spectrum. So let's try and give them some relation. So let's consider the following spectral decompositions. Thank you. Now we want B to be some function of A. So you can do this like this, for example. Also, C is a function of A.
Sorry, what do you mean by the disjoint, or I guess the over, or whatever?
C1 would do something different, so we get this to C2. I imagine this is your category with the spectrum of the composition. So if you had to draw this guy, you would have a density operator. Obviously, there's a map. Can map this to this and that to that. So this is the category. So now to this category, we apply the definition of the spectral free sheaf. So what you do is that to each element, self-adjoint operator, you assign the spectrum. I mean, it is a very easy example, but I think it's good. So just do it anyway. Such that now if you have arrows, everything goes the other way around. So, well, this is the entire thing. B goes the other way. So if you get this guy, what is this guy? Well, you do the following. So it will map this to this. How does it do it? So it picks first element A1. This A1 has associated projection operator P1. The only possible generalization of this guy is this. Right? So to A1 it associates B1. Actually, I don't need the bracket. What about A2? A2 associated P2. Again, the only projection operator which implies this guy is this one. So again, you pick B1. The only different one is the last one. So these are the same, so you pick P2. And so on and so forth. So here you have now the definition of this map. So if you had A1, A2, A3, A1, A2, I don't remember how I went. A1 and A2 to be. And this went that way. And you do that for all of it. And this, so you can see how this pre-sheaf in a way tells you all the relations, at this level anyway, all the relations that you have between the self-adjoint operators in terms of the spectrum. And we'll see that an equivalent thing, an equivalent pre-sheaf, but now you change your category here, will be precisely what you use in the Taubes formulation of quantum theory as the analog of your state space. Okay, so that's all I want to say for this pre-sheaf. Now let's go and try and define what the topos is. Now, how you define a topos is by is in an axiomatic way.
Could you perhaps take the word that went behind back?
Use that one, you mean?
No. This a word that went up. Yeah.
What about it?
No, thank you.
Oh, you want to read it? I think that there's a point, and then after that doesn't go up anymore. But, yeah. So a topos. Now, generally, you define normally a definition of a topos given axiomatically, in the sense that I said at the start that a topos is a category, so as such it's got all the things that we've said about categories, objects and morphisms. However, it's a very special type of category in the sense that it allows for a number of constructions which are defined categorically, but it's not the case that every category has them. So you define a category, but not every category has them. So what this means is that a topos has a much more richer structure than just any category. So it means that you can do much more. And in particular, it has got so much structure that it looks like sets, in the sense that anything that you can think of doing in set theory, you have a generalized version in a different topos. I mean, this is basically probably because sets is a topos, is a very special type of topos because it allows that internal description of things, but is nonetheless a topos. So anything that you can do in a topos, in a set, has a generalized version of a topos. So that's actually quite useful when you try and understand things, right? Because instead of just getting the most general definition, you project in a set, and that's kind of easy to do. So that's important. So you have to remember that everything that you can do in sets, you can do in topos. So what are those special elements that exist in any topos? And these are the following. So first of all, a topos is a category. With extra elements. Properties, maybe. In the sense that, first of all, in tau, there exists or has terminal objects. This we've already seen what it is. It has initial objects. Has exponentials, which we're going to do today. Pushouts. I mean, a more succinct way of saying that is that it has all limits and collimits, but I never really mentioned, and there's in the lecture notes, but you can just list it the same way. And then the most important thing, what that has, something that's called a sub-object classifier. That's very important. We kind of saw it at this Yeah, I think I mentioned something when we were defining internal external version. The sub-object classifying set was this guy here. I know that well, plus set and maps. But in a topos, it's much more general object. Okay, so these are the constructs which each of them is defined in a categorical language, but if a category admits the construction of all these objects, then that category is a topos. And another feature which this construction implies that the internal logic of a topos is a Hating algebra. That also I will describe. So it's not a Boolean algebra like you have in normal set theory. But it's something more general, and just a few words, but we'll look at it in details after. The difference is basically that, you know, in normal Boolean algebra, you can define, there is the so-called law of excluded middle, which tells you that basically either something is true or is false. Right? So the law. So it tells you this. Now, in a Hating algebra, this is not the case. You get this. Is not necessary. So I don't know if anyone has done topology. So if you consider all the collection of open sets in a topological space, there's actually a Hating algebra, right? So imagine you have an open set. The negation is closed, so to stay within the opens, you have to get the interior. And obviously you're missing the boundary. So there's actually a Hating algebra. For practical purposes, all that the fact that this is just less or equal means that you cannot prove things by contradiction. Apart from that, I mean, you still have deductive laws and it's still a logic. It's just that you cannot use proof by contradiction. And we'll say more on that later. So you can see that it's a generalized version of a Boolean logic. A Boolean logic is just a limit. Yeah? It's just a bit more general. Okay, so what are these objects? Oh. We've seen what these two are. Now we're trying to find the remaining. I'm not sure I can get through all of them, but let's try. So what are exponentials? Now, when I'll define exponentials, what I'll do is first define what there are in sets. Then try and extrapolate the properties that definition of exponential gives you in sets, properties which do not rely on an internal description. So you abstract, and then see how you get to the topos definition of an exponential. And then we'll go the other way around, and so we'll go full circle. Okay, so in sets, so what's an exponential? Sets given to objects or to sets. Exponential is basically the collection of all maps of this kind. So this internal description, right? I'm describing this object in terms of the characteristic of its component elements. Oh, and this is obviously a set, yeah? This is the set. So from this definition, what can you abstract? Well, you can abstract the following, that first of all, these two belong to sets, and this guy belongs to sets. So the first characteristic is that the exponential of two objects, which belong to some category, has to belong to that category. That's the first. And the second is that somehow this object has to define some relation between A and B. I don't know what it is, but it has to relate them. So I'll put in inverted commas. I don't really know what it is yet. R. So what we're going to try and do is to define this object operationally. So we have this, then we have to define an object in C which somehow gives a certain relation between these two. So obviously you still, you always try and get inspiration from sets, huh? Because we're trying to go that way. We're trying from the particular, we're trying to abstract. So you try and get inspiration from the particular. So, okay, so these are the three objects you're interested in. So you define this map. It's called an evaluation map, which first I write, then I explain, which is a map from the product of this two to B. Now this guy here, I did write in the lecture notes, but I never actually said what it is. So just an aside. Can I delete this one? What's the product? Product of two elements in C is a third element in C plus a pair of maps, which are those the projection maps. Another pair of maps from C to so for any other pair of maps there exists a unique map which you define in terms of these two from C to the product such that this diagram comes. So when it's like that, it means it's unique. So this is the definition of product. It's just so you know what I'm talking about here. So it's this has two objects and it has projections. And there's unique arrows such that this guy commutes. Okay, so going back to the exponential, we want to define this object in such a way that it represents certain relations. So you play with what you have this object. So you define a map, which inspired from set theory, it'd be the following. So here now, from now on what's sets? Here's general, this is set. So what is this in sets? You have something like that, evaluation. And you define it as follows. So in set, this makes sense. And I said the set is a topos. Anything you can do in sets has a topos analog. And so this guy here does exist. It's well defined. Okay, however, it doesn't really uniquely define this. In order to uniquely define it, you need to require certain other properties. And these are the following. So what you require is the following, that given any other map, now from another object, not that one, to A, there exists a unique this guy to this guy here, yes, such that this diagram commutes. So you uniquely identify this guy by saying that any other map of this form uniquely factors through this evaluation map. So you really specify what this guy is. If you go in sets, that makes sense again. Keep on this other thing. No, I'll keep this. Let's go. So in sets, if you try and go around the diagram, you see that this definition actually makes sense. So what you're requiring is that this G is the same as this composition. So you have evaluation of this map here. Now when sets, so we're actually going to get an element here. Is equal to G of this element. Okay, I just realized I didn't actually say what this guy is. So for a given G, you can uniquely define this. So how do you do it? So this G hat is a map from C to this guy here. This is the general definition. Now in set, since we're going to actually use it in set, what is this? So for an object here, you define this guy in terms of G. This definition shows that this guy is unique given G, defined in terms of. And what this thing is a map from A to B. And there is one for each C. So C you keep fixed, and then you vary the A. So for each element, it gives you this guy here. Where G you were given at the start. Okay, so given that, let's go around the diagram and see if this makes sense. Okay, this is just that. So what happens here? Now we're going to stay. So you have G, we defined it there. So G was just for each C, it gives you this. And this is the identity A. The evaluation map, I wrote it somewhere, I don't know where. Oh, here it is. Makes you evaluate this object here. So this just gives you this. So So it works. So in sets, all this construction makes sense. Now in sets, we've used old, I mean, we've actually defined each of them component-wise. Now we forget about that definition and abstract it all. And so you reach to the definition of an exponential. So given two objects in some category C, the exponential will still, which one did I do? B2A. The exponential is an element of C plus an evaluation map. Such that for any other map G. So it's basically what we did, but now in abstract terms. There exists a unique G hat. Such that that diagram there commutes. So I'm not sure if the idea is clear. So we started off with the definition of exponential in sets, which is the familiar one. Then you tried and abstract the properties of this definition, which did not rely on the notion of elements. So okay, this one is very easy. This one was a bit more complicated, but then you could define a relation between them two, these two objects, which in set mimics what happened in the individual elements. Then you showed that this relation was unique in the sense that any other factor through it. Then you forget about the individual elements and you define an exponential all in terms of this kind of more abstract elements. Is the logic kind of clear?
So did you finish the definition?
Such that this commutes, I just didn't write it, but such that, yeah, this is the diagram. This guy commutes. So, but that is the definition. This is unique. Yeah, this is the definition of what an exponential is. Which, if you look at insets, is just this. Okay, now we go the other way around. Now we're going to try, forget about this. So we're going to try from this guy to recover in a way this. However, we're going to try and recover it not exactly in sets. So it's kind of, maybe recover is not quite the right word, but given this abstract definition of what an exponential is, we're going to see if it is possible to define a one-to-one correspondence between the elements of this, whatever they might be, and maps. I'm not saying that they're the same thing. I'm just saying that it's possible to define a one-to-one correspondence between this and this. In sets, you can say that they're equal. that would make some sense in the sense that you can define an object with the properties of that element. In a general category, everything is defined in terms of relations. So if this guy has elements, I can't say that this element's R. You can only say this elements have a certain relation to. That's all you can say. So what you can say in a general category is that there is a certain relation between elements in here and some maps from A to B. So there's an injective relation, there's a one-to-one correspondence. So how do you do that? So again, we'll do this diagram. So now we're going to have a specific choice for C, which is this guy here. Now in lecture two, I think, I told you that an element is a map from the terminal object to whatever you're considering the element to be of. This is as far as you can say. Now we want to show that given a map, there is a one-to-one correspondence between this and an element. So first of all, this is isomorphic to just this. Sorry, we're not quantifying. Okay. In fact, G, you can either use this isomorphic or the fact that G is written as F projection operator. So given an F, you can define a G. Given a G, you can uniquely define this guy here, which is a map from this guy here to the other. So, I mean, this is how the proof goes. So that then you, for each F, you can uniquely define an element. So what this means, there's a one-to-one correspondence between maps of this type and elements of this exponential. In sets, this is, they're the same, right? But in a general category, you can only say there's a certain correspondence between. So I don't know if it's clear, but in a general category, you always have to pay attention that you can never define things in terms of objects, of internal objects, always about relations, or even an element is a relation. So it's like the concept of equality gets translated to isomorphic. All right, now let's do pushouts. Now pushouts, I'm not going to go this way, I'm just going to tell you what they are. So what's it? Actually, I'll do pullbacks first, lazy. Let's do pullbacks. So what's a pullback? Okay, definition. So given a pair of functions, in some category C, yeah? The pullback is a pair of maps. call them H and D. So A and K from D to B. Such that first thing, the diagram commutes. So we have this one. So this is the first condition. And two, there exists a pair of maps I from some object E to A and J from E. B such that for a unique this diagram here commutes. Oops. I'll just write it. So what this means is that now you have that I is equal to H O L and J is equal to K O L. If all these things holds, you say that G is pulled back by F, or F pulled back by G. Now normally this guy here is denoted as a special type of product of A and B. A kind of a pullback product. It depends on C. This dependence is because you require this diagram to commute. So how do you do this in sets? Example in sets. So your D now is what you define this to be in sets. So it's pairs, which are a subset of the full product, such that, so you require commutativity, so such that F of A is equal to G of A. The first requirement. Okay, what about the second? So you need a map L from whatever, from E to this guy here. So we define it. And you want to define it such that this is true and is the unique one that does so. So you define it very trivially, like this follows. And then, obviously, these relations are satisfied, given that definition. Oh, I didn't say what H is. Okay, so first you define this, then you define H, which was from, these are just the projections, really. And then G, okay. Given this definition, then this condition is truly satisfied. so that you just have to put a knee here and do it. Now the other thing is that it has to be unique. So in order to show that it's unique, then you have to show that if you have another map, imagine you have another map. This guy did this such that this is true. Well, here's M. Then M is equal, isomorphic to L. So such that I is equal to H O M and J is equal to K O M. Given that, you have to show that L is equal to M. For a given element, this is that guy. And you apply this definition. On the other hand, this, right, so what H does, it projects the first element, and I thought there's something really wrong. H projects the first element, and K projects the second element. So this actually should have. So what this means is that the first element of this guy has to be A, and the second element of this guy has to be B, so that M, what this means is that this is equal to A. So this is what I say, for each E. And so that is what this, where is it gone? I don't know. This complicated definition is for sets is just this with projection maps. Okay, I think I'm not gonna have time to do all the rest. But anyway, the next time we're gonna do pushouts. But pushouts are really duals to this guy. And then we'll do the subobject classifier as the most important object in the topic. For now, thanks. Oh, I need to give you the thing, right?
There's no haste in that, so we could have something printed out on Friday. That's
okay. Okay, that's good.
By the way, are they online somewhere?
No, I should really do it tonight. I haven't done it tonight. I will put it. I need to do it.